This is a commercial-free, streaming-on-demand presentation from WBPN.
After 50 years, we're finally getting the straight story of what happened during the making of the Beatles' Let It Be album and the documentary filmed during the making of that record. Paul McCartney.
What used to happen was I would ring the guys and sort of say, I think it's about time we made a record. Do you agree? Ringo now will say to me, oh, we couldn't stand those bloody phone calls, you know. But I say, at least it got you out of the house, got you into a studio, and you're very happy with the result. I thought, as I say, that it would be a good thing for us to make some new music. And we did, and we set ourselves this amazing task, which people can't believe these days, where we said, yeah, over the next month, we're going to write all these new songs, learn them all, and then play them live. So, yeah, that's prolific. And we did it. That's what's amazing.
Ringo Starr on the three-part documentary film done by producer Peter Jackson.
I did not like the original one. I keep saying this because it was based on like a two-minute incident when we were there a month, and it was just like a downer, and it didn't show any joy. And I was there, I remember we had great laughs, we made good music. So our group of companies, Apple, we found 56 hours of unused footage from the session of the documentary. And Peter Jackson, every time he came into LA, when he could in 2019, he'd say, look what I found, and be like, we'd be laughing, and John and I would be doing some silly act or something, you know. There was lots of expression of joy as well as the music. What is incredible with the documentary is that it's 6 hours long. You know, that's a month of what we did. And out of it, besides we now got a great documentary, we did get a great record, and we did get a live performance on the roof. I mean, you know, all of that came from that documentary we were making then. And now you see a lot more of what went on around it. And for me, one of the incredible parts is that George and Paul had a little shout at each other, and George left. It's a well-known fact. We didn't know he'd left. We thought he just walked off, and he didn't come back after lunch. And I'm on the drums, Paul, you know, and John's on guitar. And if you listen closely to how we played, it was so emotional. We were like this heavy metal band. It was like, what? You know, how are we going to deal with this? And just for me, I love to hear it because it's exactly the place the three of us went to because George decided to leave for a while.
Hi, I'm Dan Neer. The Beatles and Capital UME have released multiple 50th anniversary versions of Let It Be. The Let It Be album has been newly remixed by producer Giles Martin and engineer Sam O'Kell in stereo 5.1 surround DTS and Dolby Atmos. The Super Deluxe Collections also feature 27 previously unreleased session recordings, including 17 songs the Beatles began work on that would be found on the future Abbey Road masterpiece, and several songs that would be on future solo albums. Not a bad month's work, huh? There's also a 4-track Let It Be EP and the never-before-released 14-track Get Back Stereo LP mixed and compiled by engineer Glyn Johns in May of 1969. Additionally, these super deluxe editions feature a 100-page hardback book with an introduction by Paul McCartney, exclusive notes and track-by-track recording information, and many previously unseen photos, personal notes, tape box images, and more. Over the next hour, we'll feature new interviews with Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr, Peter Jackson, Glyn Johns, and Giles Martin, along with archival interview with the late John Lennon, George Harrison, and George Martin. We hope this will give you a sense of the brilliance of that January 1969 work by the band and to change the incorrect public perception that those Beatles' Let It Be sessions were nothing but misery. There's a lot to unpack here, so let's get right to it.
Hi, this is Paul McCartney. Welcome to the Beatles' Let It Be at 50, all access.
Jojo was a man who thought he was a loner, but he knew it couldn't last. Jojo left his home in Tucson, Arizona, for some California grass.
a combination of three of the four versions of Get Back found on the new super deluxe version of Let It Be, out right now.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
There is no other band that could accomplish what the Beatles did during that January of 1969. The late George Harrison on the mission statement.
I think the original idea was Paul's idea to rehearse some new songs, and then we were going to pick a location and record the album of the songs in a concert. The idea was just to, you know, learn the tunes and play them, and so that we'd be able to record them without loads of overdubs.
Longtime Beatle producer, the late George Martin.
Most people, if they ever did a live album, would be rehashing old stuff. They thought, let's have a completely new album that nobody ever heard and put it in front of an audience and make a live album. That'd be our next album. And we started rehearsing down in Twickenham Film Studio, and I went along with them.
Producer of the new Let It Be releases and son of George Martin, Giles Martin.
I think it was overambitious for their time, and I think it proved to be. The reason why is that, you know, in that sort of period of sort of 63, 64, 65, that's where they worked. They were on tour, and they'd have a period in which they'd be able to write an album and go and record it. And I think Let It Be, that's what the Beatles are trying to go back and do, but their lives had changed. I mean, you know, John and Paul especially were no longer locked in hotel rooms together or in the back of a van together, so they'd go home afterwards. And you hear on outtakes of Let It Be, you know, you hear John bring in Give Me Some Truth, and they start working on it. Now, I think if that was done in 64 or 65, they'd have finished it. They'd have finished it that day, but they go home to their partners and watch TV, and they were trying to do the same thing but leading different lives. Their talent remained absolutely existent. I mean, any band now, if it was the biggest band in the world today, said we're going to do a big live show in 3 weeks, we have no idea where it's going to be, and we don't even have the songs for it, but let's go and do that. It would be crazy. And it was, you know, even for the Beatles, it was a bit of an overreach.
The ambitiousness of this project was definitely felt by John Lennon.
The whole pressure of it finally got to us. So instead of, you know, like people do when they're together, they start picking on each other. You know, it was like, it's because of you, you'd got the tambourine wrong, that my whole life is a misery. You know, it became petty, but the manifestations were on each other because we were the only ones we had.
Say we did half of them this Thursday, and then they didn't have to film the next lot of rehearsals or whatever.
Yeah.
And then we do another lot and do them in the same place, you know. If we can't, it's just how we can't learn another five or six good for Thursday. We just got Don't Let Me Down, and I've Got a Feeling, just how they should be when we hit it.
I've got a feeling deep inside, oh yeah. The train. Oh!
Everybody had a wet dream. Everybody saw the sunshine. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Everybody had a good year. Everybody let the hair down. Everybody pull the socks up. Yeah. Everybody put the food down. Oh yeah.
New stereo mix combined with the 1969 Glenn Johns mix of I've Got a Feeling from the new Beatles Let It Be Super Deluxe 5-disc release. Glenn Johns.
Because it was a live recording, Paul's idea to use me was because I'd had a reasonably good track record of making live albums. Also that I had been fortunate enough in the previous years to work with some pretty high level artists, so I was used to dealing with people who were very famous and successful and whatever else, which particularly if you're a Beatle is to be a massive problem. I mean, your best friend from school would treat you differently once you're Paul McCartney and of the Beatles. I mean, so which must be really unsettling. I've always thought it's just awful, really. So that I was arriving with a reasonable package, if you like, and they were decent enough to make me feel comfortable from the hello, you know. Within a few hours of the rehearsal starting, I was included in conversations about what, why and when, as far as the material was concerned, one thing there. So I was very happy to participate on that level.
The Beatles started recording at Twickenham Film Studios on January 2nd, 1969. The studio featured cavernous sound stages that were adapted for the filming of the Let It Be sessions. George Harrison, Ringo Starr, and John Lennon.
I thought, okay, you know, well, it's a new year and we got a new approach. But it soon became apparent that it wasn't anything new. It was just going to be painful again.
I mean, you know, the days were long and it could get boring, you know. And Twickenham just wasn't really conducive to any great atmosphere. It was just in a big barn.
I'd just spent, like, the last 6 months producing an album of this fellow, Jackie Lomax, and hanging out with Bob Dylan and the band in Woodstock and having a great time. And for me to come back into the winter of discontent with the Beatles in Twickenham was very unhealthy and unhappy.
It was just dreadful, dreadful feeling. And being filmed all the time, you know, like that. I just wanted them to go away and we'd be there at 8 in the morning, and you couldn't make music at 8 in the morning or 10 or whatever it was, in a strange place with people filming you and coloured lights.
Paul McCartney.
Even walking into this cavernous space was pretty intimidating. And I think, yeah, that might have led in some parts to the friction that came about. I think some of it was the normal friction that you get when you're trying to record and arrange your songs. Because sometimes, you know, whoever wrote it will say, oh, I don't need a guitar there. And then the guitar player will say, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, and get a bit offended, you know. So that can happen normally. But I think the big cavernous space didn't help. It certainly was not an intimate little place. But then when we went to Savile Row, it was much better, and the feeling was better because it was a place we knew and it wasn't this big empty space. So I think that was a little bit better, conducive for the making of music and the playing of it. And then, obviously, the great, because we ended up just thinking, well, let's just go and do it on the roof.
Don't let me down. We'll be right back.
she does. Ooh, she does. Yes, she does. And if somebody loved me like she does, ooh, she does. Yes, she does. The first time, don't you know it's gonna last? It's a love that lasts forever. It's a love that has no past. Blue jet go. Ooh, she does. Yes, she does. I guess nobody ever really done me. Ooh, she done me. She done me good.
Don't Let Me Down, the first rooftop performance, recorded January 30th, 1969, and now found on the new Let It Be Deluxe and Super Deluxe releases. More reveals from the new box set and documentary when the Beatles' Let It Be at 50 returns in just a few minutes. As we go to break, let's hear one of the songs the band worked on that would appear on the yet-to-be-recorded Abbey Road album.
What could it be, Paul? Something in the way she moves. It's
time.
I can't think of what attracted me at all.
Just say whatever comes in your head each time. Attracts me like a cauliflower until you get the word.
Yeah, but I've been through this one, like, for about 6 months.
You haven't had 15 people joining in, though.
No. Yeah. I mean, just that line, I couldn't think of anything like a... Attracts me like a pomegranate. We could have that. Attracts me like a pomegranate.
WBPM app for your mobile phone is now available. Open your Android or Apple store and search for 929 WBPM. It can't fry an egg or peel potatoes, but you can get instant access to WBPM stream anytime, wherever you are. And even more new stuff is being added soon. So download us today. Open your app store and search for 929 WBPM.
Have you heard the octopus one?
No.
I'd like to be one of the
Keep it up.
You know, I'll need a few more bits of that.
So come with me. Hello, I'm Ringo Starr, and this is Dan Near with more of the Beatles. Let it be all access.
Thanks, Ringo. We return to our celebration of the 50th anniversary release of Let It Be and the new six-hour documentary of The Sessions Get Back, produced and directed by Peter Jackson, with a snippet of Ringo playing Octopus's Garden for the other Beatles and George lovingly contributing. Even though Paul McCartney says their newly minted Apple recording studios were more conducive to the recording and filming of Let It Be, George Martin's initial reaction was one of dismay. The studios were built by Magic Alex Martis, head of Apple Electronics for the Beatles.
The studios were hopeless because they were just empty rooms. And Magic Alex said that the EMI was no good and he could build a studio much better. Well, he didn't. And in fact, Magic Alex, for all his technical expertise, had forgotten to put any holes in the wall between the studio and the control room. So we had to run the cables out through the door. And there was a nasty twitter in one corner, which came from the air conditioning, which we had to switch off whenever we made a record. Apart from that, it was ideal.
EMI came to their number one recording artist's rescue. Engineer at the time, Alan Parsons.
It was chaotic. I mean, Glyn Johns was, just shaking his head in disbelief that he was expected to actually make a recording with this console. It was incredibly badly made. The console, you know, all the switches and knobs were, you could see the cutouts weren't straight and things like that. But yes, we were on a rescue mission at Abbey Road. They sent two four-track consoles down there and an eight-track machine, and I was just sent to be the tape op. And they were filming, the whole recording situation was being filmed, and I think they felt that they were achieving the goal of making a live album with no overdubs. That was the mission.
The brand new Peter Jackson Get Back documentary helped to jog Paul McCartney's memory.
Seeing some of the sequences that Peter Jackson had put together and remembering how silly we were. I mean, I've said to people since, I said, it's a wonder we got anything done because we're just messing around. But when you think about it, what was great was we're learning the songs, but we're not being too serious about it. But even to play them as a joke, you're learning them. So when it comes to playing them for real, like on the roof as it was, then you're not so intimidated about them because you've been having a laugh. And I think that was the nicest thing for me, just remembering how, you know, John comes in waltzing and you know, then we're playing and doing silly things, singing the two of us together and singing it like we're doing a ventriloquist act, trying not to move our lips. You know, so it was really great, actually. Seeing all of that was very powerful.
Morning, morning, everybody. Another bright day. Morning, Cameron. Okay.
catches our hand. Two of us wearing raincoats, standing solo in the sun. You and me chasing paper, getting nowhere.
Very happy memory for Paul McCartney from the new stereo remix of Let It Be, the Beatles performing The Two of Us. Peter Jackson.
I said, look, the one documentary I don't want to do is a documentary about the breaking up of the Beatles. If it's as miserable as it's supposed to be. But it was clear that these were a bunch of friends. I mean, it was clear that these were just mates who were doing what they were doing. It was sort of like, I'm really glad that in doing this project, I now understand the Get Back sessions. I mean, I totally understand what they were, what they're intended to be, what they turned into. I mean, I just get it. I understand it now. So I'm pleased that I don't have to carry all the negative stuff in my head going forward anymore. You know, I actually have a much more of a balanced point of view of it now, so I'm very happy about that.
Another revelation for Peter was regarding John Lennon.
The thing with John Lennon that I didn't even contemplate before I saw the footage is how immensely patient he is, and quiet and friendly. I mean, he never raised his voice. Reading all the books and everything else and understanding what I believe to be the Get Back sessions, I was expecting a John Lennon who didn't want to be there, who was resentful, grumpy, and it's actually the absolute opposite. I mean, I said that to Paul, actually. I said that one of the things over the years, whenever Paul's been asked in interviews, you know, to talk about John, which he obviously has been asked in thousands and thousands of times, he usually ends up saying that John was a lovely guy. And so I've been watching these interviews over the years thinking, lovely guy. I mean, I've seen him be funny, I've seen him be witty, I've seen him be sarcastic, I've seen him be all these things, but lovely. I've never really seen him be lovely. But the Get Back footage has the lovely John. And so I'm so pleased that this footage, the lovely John that Paul has been talking about for years, the lovely John was actually captured on film.
John Lennon and Yoko Ono.
I think looking back, you understand that there'd be four guys very close together, and the women that we were with then, wives or girlfriends, had been, you know, the old-fashioned type of female that we all know and love, you know, the one that was in the kitchen all the time with the baby, and you never, you know, she never came to the sessions even. You never saw the wives, only for openings when they did their hair, you know. And suddenly we were together all the time, you know, sort of in a corner mumbling and giggling together and doing Two Virgins and Bags and that. Paul George, and I think, what the hell are they doing? What's happened to him? You know, and my attention completely went off them. It wasn't deliberate. It was just like I was so involved and intrigued with what we were doing that I. And then we'd look around and see that we weren't being approved.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my opened mind, possessing and caressing me.
call me like a million eyes. They call me on and on across the universe. Thoughts meander like a restless wind inside a letterbox. They tumble blindly as they make their way across the universe.
Another masterwork from Let It Be, heard in its newly remixed sonic splendor, Across the Universe by the Beatles. When we come back for our final segment of the Beatles' Let It Be at 50, All Access, you'll learn how George Harrison quit the Beatles and then came back to save the album. Here's Paul McCartney to take us into the break.
It was good to hear Teddy Boy, which had been a song that I'd been working on and which ended up on my own solo record, McCartney, after the Beatles broke up. But it was nice to remember that we'd played around with it and that we didn't include it, but we had a go at it. So it's nice to hear a Beatles version of that song that ended up as a solo version for me.
Mommy, don't worry now, Teddy Boy's here, taking good care of you. Mama, don't worry, your Teddy Boy's here, Teddy's gonna see you through. It just goes that Teddy's gonna see you through.
Every year, a lot of people do a really great thing and donate to the food banks of the Hudson Valley, but they don't always think through all the dynamics of their donation. Here's a few examples. Everyone donates boxes of Kraft mac and cheese, but you need milk and butter to make it, which is hard to get from food banks. They get a lot of Rice-A-Roni donations, but not the butter and oil you need to cook it. Canned food donations should always have a pull-top tab, unless you're going to donate a can opener with it. Hamburger Helper needs fresh ground beef to be useful. Food banks get tons of peanut butter and jelly, but no bread or rolls. And eggs are desperately needed by food banks, but are never donated. And non-food items like dishwashing detergent, feminine hygiene products, and hand sanitizer are always welcome and put to good use. So if you're thinking about making a donation to a food bank, maybe ask them first what they really need to support the people who depend on them. But thanks for doing your part to help our less fortunate neighbors, not just during the holidays, but all year long, because they're depending on us.
Sick and tired of rearing lines by seasick, narrow-minded shorts, and hypocrite. All I want is the truth. We should change the guys, tell me some truth. I've had enough of reading lines by soon sitting down hard-sided politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
That's the Beatles working on the John Lennon song Give Me Some Truth during the sessions for Let It Be. Just one of the many joys you'll discover on the new Super Deluxe version. Thanks for hanging around for the final segment of our celebration of the 50th anniversary of Let It Be and the release of the new documentary Get Back on the making of that album. This is Let It Be at 50. All Access. I'm Dan Neer. Another reason the Beatles became so focused and productive in the Apple Studios at Savile Row was the addition of the vastly talented keyboardist, the late Billy Preston, who the Beatles met in their Hamburg, Germany days when they were on the bill with Little Richard.
Well, it's hard for people to imagine how thrilled the four of us were to just even see that any great American rock and roller in the flesh, you know. And we were just almost paralyzed with adoration with both of them. And a side note is Little Richard's organist was Billy Preston. And he looked about 10 then, but he was good then.
George Harrison famously walked out and quit during the stressful Twickenham portion of the Let It Be sessions.
It's interesting to see how people behave nicely when you bring a guest in, because they don't really want everybody to know that they're so bitchy. And this happened back in the White Album, when I brought Eric Clapton in to play on While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Suddenly everybody's on their best behavior. So I put a message out to find if Billy was in town and told him to come in to Savile Row, which he did. Straight away just became 100% improvement in the vibe in the room. And everybody was happier also to have somebody else playing in the band.
Blimey, mine, I kept coming across the words I, me and mine in books about yoga and stuff. I mean, you know, about the meaning of life and the difference between the ego and the soul, you know, the real you and the you that people mistake their identity to be, this bag of flesh and bones, and the ego. And that's really it. I, me and mine is all ego orientation. But it is something which is used all the time. You know, no one's frightened of saying it. Everyone's playing it, coming on strong all the time. All through your life, I, me, mine.
All through the day, I, me, mine, I, me, mine, I, me, mine. All through the night, I'm in mine, I'm in mine, I'm in mine. Now the frightened are leaving it, everyone's weaving it, coming on strong all the time. All through the day, I'm in mine.
I Me Mine by the Beatles from Let It Be. The title piece of the album was written by Paul McCartney.
My mother was Mary Patricia Moen McCartney, and a good Catholic girl from Ireland, came over when she was 11. And she died when I was quite young still. much later, when the Beatles were having success around about the time of Let It Be, we were all getting a little crazy, and I'd sort of gone to bed one night, well crazy, and sort of had a dream. And she'd been in the dream, which is always lovely, you know, and people who've been long gone come in dreams, because you actually meet them again. Even if it's just within the confines of your own head, still lovely. You're actually chatting to them, which is a big plus, you know. And she was in the dream, and she sort of said, it'd be all right, it'd be all right. And she was very sort of calming, and I sort of woke up thinking, oh, I feel better now, you know, I feel better about things. As I usually did, I started writing a song. And because she was my mother and her name was Mary, I said, Mother Mary comes to me.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. And when the broken-hearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer, let it be. For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. There will be an answer, let it be.
Unfortunately, that's the last song we have time to fit into our all-access special, but before we finish, let's have a few closing comments. Here's Peter Jackson on the rooftop concert that you're going to see more of during the 2021 Thanksgiving holiday three-part documentary he produced for the Beatles on Disney+.
Now, you know, in our sort of viral world, it'd be a brilliant event, wouldn't it? Because someone would hear it and then they tweet it and say, the Beatles are playing on the roof. But you sort of see at street level that sort of bush telegraph operating. If you take the press out of it, one of the things I find the most sort of compelling and entertaining about what goes on at street level. It's the way that there's a cab pulls up and there's two women jump out all excited because someone's phoned them up. You can tell and said, the Beatles played on the roof. And then this ad hoc crowd that assembles on the other rooftops. That's amazing to see. And then the people complaining. This sort of music's all right in its place, but I think there's a bit of an imposition to disrupt all the business in the area, says this one fella. And you're thinking, it's the Beatles' last performance, you know. There's a little bit of the Beatles versus the establishment here, you know. And this is the London where men wore bowler hats to work and all that, and some of the people in charge of the offices didn't like it, but the workers loved it. You can imagine their underlings were all taking their lunch break early and all that, and the Beatles were on their side. So it's a restatement of the Beatles as a people's band. That's easily forgotten in the midst of all this.
Ringo Starr.
There isn't a word that expresses my love for Peter and what he did. He's a great human being. I'm looking for the good side of the pandemic, and the good side was Peter was locked up in New Zealand, so he had nothing better to do than edit this documentary. And he did such an incredible job. And, you know, my main point of not liking the original was that there was no joy in it. And, you know, four guys in a room, there's a lot of joy, there's a bit of argument, there's a bit of this, that, and the other. And Peter has brought that out. He's found all this footage, and we're actually having fun with each other, and we're playing great. And, you know, when you see that it started in, you know, the beginning of January and it ends the end of January, what have we done? We've made this album, we've done this gig on the roof, and we've worked hard. So for me, it's interesting because I was blown away that it only took a month. I'd forgotten that. And the record with Giles now, the remasters, I love the remasters. And just one funny thing on the remasters, you know, they'd remastered Abbey Road and Paul and I and our families and friends and guests went to a playback in Abbey Road. I turned to Paul and I thought, I'm much too busy on this record. Because you can hear me now. You can hear everything I do now, you know. And but it was just a funny moment for me.
Paul McCartney.
It was a bit dark and it didn't really show how we were when we worked together. And obviously because it was to do with the breakup of the Beatles. So I never felt very good about it. And I talked to Peter Jackson and said, I'm not sure I'm going to like this, Peter. But then a few weeks later, once he'd started looking through the footage, he sent me a text. He said, no, it's not like that at all. And then now I've seen it. He's right. It's not like that. It really just shows four mates working together, having a laugh, messing around so much, but making the music that we made and really just enjoying working together. So I think that's the thing that I'm happiest about, that it shows the real truth of how we were at that period. I think I was 27. I mean, 27, you know, it seems old when you're 27. You know, I always say to people, no, it's actually very young. And it was, we were, you know, just young men, really. And it was difficult because here was the band that you've been with all your life. And this was the only really serious job you'd ever held down. And now the band was breaking up. So it was very difficult to know what to do. And it was very sad thinking that you wouldn't be making music with your mates anymore. But through the years, we got back talking with each other and re-established our personal relationships. So that made it okay.
You can get any of the multiple versions of the 50th anniversary release of Let It Be wherever you buy music. And don't forget to catch the Get Back documentary on Disney Plus, Let It Be at 50. All Access was produced in New Jersey by Near Perfect Productions for Capital UME. All rights reserved. No portion may be reproduced without the written permission of the producers. Special thanks to Aoife Corbett and Steve Ithel of MPL Communications, Elizabeth Freund of Beautiful Day Media, and Jamie Hartley of UME. I'm Dan Neer.
And I'm Ringo Starr. Peace and love.
I'm Paul McCartney. Thanks for listening.